and welcome to the Who's On Podcast, part of the Sacred Podcast Network. And guess what? After months of waiting, it is time. The college baseball season is upon us. Plenty of teams across the country will kick off their seasons this weekend for opening weekend. Virginia, of course, will be down in Puerto Rico. The team just leaving early this week to get down there for the Puerto Rico Challenge. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But we got our UVA baseball season preview today, and I got some great guests coming on. Greg Medea from the Daily Progress. You're used to him. He's been on here more than a couple times. Greg, thanks for coming back.
You're going to have to start paying me.
And we're getting to that point now. And then, of course, we had to get Monty Taylor, ACC content lead for College Baseball Central. He's been doing a lot over there as they get ready for the season. Y'all just had your Virginia takeover day, actually. So you're well-rehearsed for this today, Monty. Welcome on to the Who's On Podcast.
Yeah, I'm really excited to be here with you guys. I've missed you guys since last summer in Omaha, and it's good to see you guys again. I've been following you guys covering football and basketball, and just happy for us to be back talking baseball.
Yeah, it's kind of the press box crew here. And of course, last we left off, we were in that press box in Omaha, Nebraska, the greatest show on dirt, as they call it. And that's the last time we saw this Virginia team. Obviously, you know, we've had some conversations with them back in the fall as they're going through that, and this spring as we get ready for the preseason. But last we saw them in a competitive feel was in Omaha. They finished 0-2 yet again, six straight losses at the College World Series. And that's kind of where I want to start is, Greg, I know you've talked to some of the guys coming back this year and just how much that fuels them. I mean, obviously every year we talk about it, they break down to Omaha in the huddles. That's been the goal, but it feels like it's a little bit more this year. It's Omaha plus, like they get to Omaha and do something.
No doubt. Talking to Henry Godbout, Jay Woolfolk, guys who have been part of the program for not only last year's run, but the year before, and experienced both early exits. It's apparent that it feels like this season the pressure is on to excel in Omaha. Like Jay Woolfolk put it to me, like it's national championship or it'll kind of feel like a failure of a season, which those are extreme expectations to place on a singular year, especially in baseball, which, as you guys know, it's a little different from the other sports. You can be really good and have some weird things happen, and then all of a sudden you're at home after a regional or a super regional. So that's some pretty tough goals and standards to set. But I think if you're Virginia and you look around and you're Jay Woolfolk and Henry Godbout and you see what's back around you and Henry Ford and some of the pitching like Evan Blanco and Bryson Moore and Matt Augustine, you're thinking to yourself, man, this team might be the most talented team. And that's what Harrison Didowick said to me that they've played on. And he'd been part of both of those teams too. So it says a lot, especially when you consider they've had first round picks like Kyle Teal and Griff O'Farrell the last few years. For those guys to say stuff like that, man, the pressure's on, and I think it's fair if they're going to put it on themselves.
Yeah, Monty, to build off of that, to go a step further, I had Darren Vaught on here last week to go over an ACC baseball preview, and he said this is Brian O'Connor's most talented team. And to think about that and just to kind of sit back and think about that, it's quite the statement, but that is a lot of national people are thinking, people around the team. I've even kind of been on that train a little bit too, just with the amount of talent that they have coming back and some of the big additions that they made that we'll talk about later. Do you agree with that statement?
Yeah, I for those that don't know, I cover the whole ACC, but I grew up a Virginia fan. So I've been watching since the Ryan Zimmerman days, and I would agree that this is the best team Brian O'Connor's had and probably the University of Virginia as a historical program has ever had. So the fact that national writers and media people are taking notice is significant. I think you've got, it's the first time since 2015 where, they've gotten some connections there. And obviously that 2015 year is significant because that's when they won the national championship. Now the season didn't exactly go as they had planned in that year, but the ultimate goal was achieved. It's really going to be interesting to see if they're able to handle these expectations, because the ACC as a whole is as good as it's ever been, I think, from top to bottom. I think there are teams at the bottom of the ACC that can compete for an NCAA tournament spot if things go right for them. So it's going to be really tough to kind of navigate the ACC schedule because there are no easy schedules. I'm talking Pitt and BC at home are not going to be the Pitt and BC matchups of old where it's just going to be an easy sweep. They're going to have to battle every single weekend. The good news for that is that they'll be battle tested once they get to a regional or super regional.
I know with Darren, we're listing off teams. You go five, six deep of teams with Omaha, potential to get there to the College World Series. You mentioned it. Let's kind of lay it on a little bit more thick. I know they love just kind of all the stuff pointing back to 2015, but pick to win the ACC in the preseason ACC coaches poll for the first time since 2015. Number two in the D1 baseball preseason poll for the first time since 2015, which is also the first year that D1 baseball did the poll. And also, just to even kind of juice it up a little bit more, Brian O'Connor says this was the latest they got onto the field for preseason training since 2015. So all the signs are pointing toward that 2015. And it seems like every time we say something, it's the first time since 2015. But let's kind of get into this team right now. We got a lot more coming up. I want to go to the schedule first because we got the Puerto Rico Challenge coming up where they're going to play Michigan, Villanova, and Rice, a pretty decent field. They come back home for, their first home game of the year for a little midweek game, and then they head down to Austin, Texas for the Round Rock Classic against Oregon State, Minnesota, and Oklahoma, a really compelling field down there. And talking to some people just around the program, they had these tougher non-conference schedules back in 2017, 18, 19, when I first came onto the beat, and they just didn't have the teams to really compete against those schedules. Then they kind of backed off that a little bit and had some easier non-conference schedules the last couple of years, opening up against, some lesser competition. But now they're kind of they got both. They got the team and they've got the schedule. What do y'all make of this non-conference slate so far?
Yeah, I guess for me, for at least from the player perspective, from what guys have said, it's like you start the year with a regional. They went down to Jacksonville. Imani, I know you went to Jacksonville last year, and you get that little taste of what June is like in February, and it kind of jump starts you into the season, right? There's no reason to let the foot off the gas in the preseason, right? You better be ready for these first set of games because your competition's going to be ready. So to me, that's what it's like as you approach it. And Brian O'Connor approached Jacksonville last year like it was a regional. You approach it like that. Of course, in the end, you're not going to burn a pitcher out in February. But you for your players, they treat it like a regional, and because of that, I think there's some benefit down the road. That to me is what stands out.
Yeah, it seems like they really valued that experience they got last year in Jacksonville. I know, Monty, you could probably speak to that as well.
Yeah, it's interesting to echo basically exactly what Greg said. I mean, Oak mentioned it over and over in the press conferences at the time that they were treating it like a regional. They did treat it like a regional. They won that event, by the way. And when I talked to Henry Godbout over the summer while he was in the Cape, he mentioned how helpful it was getting some of that experience right away to kind of experience a postseason kind of environment at a neutral site really early, and then have that kind of experience, that format experience later on when they hosted a regional at home.
Nice little quirk in the non-conference schedule this year. Virginia has played at minor league baseball stadiums in the past. Obviously, the Diamond down in Richmond is kind of a yearly thing. They've done it in Norfolk at against Old Dominion as well in the past. But playing Maryland in Fredericksburg, really interesting matchup there. I know Maryland, has had some good years in the recent history, but just to play in at Vacu Stadium, that's the home of the Fredericksburg Nationals, that'll be a really interesting one. And it's kind of that nice little scheduling quirk where Virginia is flying out of DC to go to Cal later in the week, and so they're gonna hit up this game on their way up there. Should be an interesting one there. But we talked about the ACC, how loaded it is this year. Looking at kind of the ACC schedule, they got some big road trips: Florida State, NC State, Georgia Tech, that long trip to Cal and Virginia Tech, and then some big home series as well. Duke's the one that kind of jumps off the page. Monty, what is the biggest series on that schedule, as far as really, I guess, evaluating this Virginia team?
I think it's going to have to be Florida State on the road. That's going to be the big one for both teams because Florida State's got a lot of turnover as well. But you're going to be facing potentially the best arm in college baseball and a top three draft pick in Jamie Arnold right off the bat. You may not have to face Cam Leiter. His status is up in the air, but they've got a pretty deep pitching staff as opposed to kind of what they had last year. And then they've got a really deep lineup. So it's going to be able to test Virginia in a hostile environment that gets loud. It's going to test Virginia pitching. It's going to test the Virginia lineup. So it's going to be really interesting to see how Virginia handles Florida State in that series. And it's not early in the ACC slate either. So that the roles should be settled by then for Virginia to figure that out. And we'll be able to really see what those two teams are about when they play each other.
Yeah, that's smack dab in the middle of kind of the season in the middle of April there. Greg, are you thinking the same thing, or is there another one that jumps to mind?
I mean, that jumps out too because remember, Florida State eliminated UVA from the ACC tournament and from the Omaha College World Series from the College World Series in Omaha last year. So, I mean, from a pure motivational standpoint, I think Virginia's probably got that one circled as might want to get right against the Seminoles because the Seminoles, they ended UVA season last year. So that jumps out. The Duke series always memorable, right? They were in Charlottesville for postseason, not this past year, but the year before. They always seem to play some competitive, good games against each other. That one jumps out. And then Stanford coming to Charlottesville, right? Talk about a lot of College World Series appearances. And then you throw in the fact that they've got the phenom first baseman in Rentaro Sasaki, and you're like, holy cow. It's impressive. So you'll get to see one of the premier, up and coming players in the sport right in Charlottesville at the Dish. So that stands out to me. That's fun, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that Stanford series is going to be one of those kind of quirky, I almost baseball nerd kind of like, let's tune in and watch this series because this is going to be really entertaining baseball. Yeah, Virginia and Florida State, it doesn't feel like they match up a whole lot. And this is Virginia's first time going back down to Tallahassee since 2021. So, that's going to be obviously interesting for all the things that you mentioned. Obviously, the talent, and these are two teams expected to compete at the top of the ACC and to get to a spot in Omaha, but also just because of the intrinsic, things between these two programs from losing to them in the ACC tournament, which was kind of a little bit of a wake up call going into the postseason for Virginia. Had they showed some kind of signs there. Jay Wolfolk pitched in that game, and then that led to his breakout against Mississippi State and Kansas State in the regional super regional. So it's a really interesting schedule, and I think they got some good games in there. The home series that aren't too bad. Miami is another one as far as a home series that'll be interesting just to kind of see where that Hurricanes team is this year. But yeah, I'm really high on that Duke team. I think they've got some good Omaha upside there. I know Monty has been talking about them for a while now, but really interesting schedule. All right, let's
I
take
think too, just to make one more point, Preston, is they're
a
all over the place, right? I mean, they're going to log their miles. I think one of the players, like, it's kind of like a big league schedule. Puerto Rico, Texas, California, Florida, like you're all over the place. So you're going to, I think that alone will test them too, right? This is different from years past where you're kind of just playing, in the Carolinas, maybe you have a trip to Boston, maybe you have one trip down to Florida. They're all over the country this year. And I think that's going to test them a little bit too.
Of note, no North Carolina on the schedule this year. Obviously, that's always a big series, and we miss that one, especially because Carolina is another team that's going to be way up there in the ACC this year, coming off their own trip to Omaha. And again, another game between Virginia and UNC in Omaha last year. So we'll see where Carolina ends up from afar, I guess. No Wake Forest on the schedule this year. So yeah, you're missing some of those like quick, easy trips. You're going to Tallahassee, you're going down to Atlanta, and then obviously the big one going out to Berkeley. Let's take a quick break, and then we're going to get much more into some lineup predictions, the weekend rotation, and then as well as our season stat predictions as well. That's coming up on the Who's On podcast.
Yeah.
Welcome back into the Who's On podcast. I've got Monty and Greg here. We're going to look at this lineup now. Monty, I know you gave it your best swing earlier, just predicting this Virginia lineup because you've got so many guys coming back, obviously. Harrison Didwick, Henry Godbout, Henry Ford, Jacob Ferentz, Eric Becker, Luke Hansen. Like, you could keep going with that list. You got some younger guys that are trying to break into the lineup, like an Aiden Teal. And then you have some new faces coming in, a Chris Arroyo, a James Nunnally. Where do you see this lineup kind of? I guess we could go position by position. I think catcher is pretty easy with Jacob Ferentz coming back. First base is pretty self-explanatory with Chris Arroyo. The middle infield and third base slots kind of was up in the air, but that's pretty definitive now. Although you've got some big shoes to fill there with Griffo Farrell leaving, but Henry Godbout going to second base, Eric Becker at shortstop. And Luke Hansen at third base. What do you see for Eric Becker this year at that shortstop position?
I mean, I think he kind of went under the radar last year. He didn't hit his first home run until I believe April 4th, and that even got overshadowed by a 3-home run game by Ford.
The other
So,
freshman.
yeah, the other freshman. So, I mean, he had an OPS of like 1.17, and didn't hit a home run until like halfway through the year. He really came to his own when he had to fill in for Godbout for a stretch. And got everyday playing time. And I think we're only scratching the surface of what he can do. And he's going to be in that leadoff spot. And I think he's going to be really, really good there. Defensively, he sounds really strong. You just have to remember he's replacing a Griffo Farrell. He's a high level replacement, but he's not going to be Griffo Farrell. So that's just something to remember, that we've been used to watching Griffo Farrell make major league type plays over there for 3 years, and we're going to have to adjust our expectations a little bit for Eric Becker, who will be a very good defensive shortstop, but he is a college shortstop. I'm very excited about this lineup. I think it's one of the best in the country, and that's why they've been getting so many number one votes, and why they're ranked number two in the country.
Greg, just your thoughts on that whole Godbout Becker and Luke Hansen situation, kind of how that shakes out and how you feel confidence-wise with guys that have played a lot of baseball kind of filling those spots now.
Yeah, I think too, last year Becker had mentioned to me a few times how in the mentorship program that the Cavaliers have, Griffo Farrell was his mentor. So I think between his relationship with O'Farrell and understanding not only what it takes to play the shortstop position, but what are some of the other responsibilities that go along with playing shortstop in terms of leadership, communication on the infield, I think he'll have a feel for that from watching Griff do it and having some conversations about some of the things that Griff did to help maintain the infield and really the team as a whole. So I think he'll be fine, and he's gonna hit, right? He's gonna hit like mad. He was terrific in the postseason too, some big hits in the regional and super regional. So I think they'll be in good hands with Becker there. Hansen's a great fielding third baseman. And then you look at Godbout, and he's probably maybe he's their best pure hitter. I don't I he's a projected first round pick. That's kind of how I view him. And second base is probably his position to stay, even as he moves to the next level. So I think you should feel confident there. And I think too, when you start to look at that infield and you start to think about the team as a whole, they're going to get some pop. And this team has just hit home runs like crazy the last few years, school records in it, each of the last 2 seasons. And I think what this infield does, it kind of widens your eyes and says, oh man, if the infield's going to hit home runs, you know, the outfield's going to produce some with Henry Ford moving out there, and UVA having Ditewick out there already. Maybe they're going to set another home run record for the team. So that's kind of where my thoughts are at.
I think it's very likely. Yeah, Becker settling in there. One thing, just talking to Henry Godbout about Eric Becker and his development, just he's a longer guy than Griffo Farrell, really athletic, so he's got some length to kind of cover that shortstop position. And Godbout talked about too. You talked about the mentorship that Griffo Farrell provided last year, and Godbout said, you know, like, that's a key relationship right there between him and Becker in that double play spot. And you know, he hopes that just what he was able to absorb off of Griff O'Farrell the last, 2 years, he can kind of provide that for Eric Becker, kind of sliding into that slot now. And you mentioned Godbout probably being the best hitter on the team. He believes he's the best hitter on the team. He told me that, he wants to get as many at bats as possible because he thinks he is the best hitter on the team, and that's what he should be doing. He should be, at the plate in the big moments. So, and Luke Hansen, I'm really high on him as well. I think, it's kind of, he's one of those classic, stories of just a guy that's bided his time, waited for his opportunity. Last year, he was in a platoon system with Becker. And when Godbout got hurt, obviously, he kind of went into more of an everyday role. Now the job's his at third base, and he can really kind of grow into that. I think he's got 10 home run potential, too. He's kind of surprising with some of the pop that he shows out there. Let's move into the outfield now, because it's interesting. Obviously, you just mentioned Greg, Henry Ford moving out to right field, replacing Casey Sauke, who'd been manning that spot for three straight seasons now. In center field, Aiden Teel, another guy, been waiting his time, started off his career injured, and then last year started off as a reliever slash closer for this team, and eventually made some really big crucial plays for them in the outfield. And then you've got Harrison Didwick returning in left field. And you also got a really intriguing young freshman in James Nunnally who's making a lot of noise. How do you see that outfield shaping up, Greg?
Yeah, how many times last year did we hear Brian O'Connor said Aiden Teel is their best defensive outfielder that they have?
He
I'm
was,
looking
yeah.
forward, right? It was over and over again. I'm looking forward to watching him play center field, and seeing what he can do out there. And also from a power standpoint, he hit home runs in the fall, and he has the ability to hit the ball out of the ballpark. So that should be fun to watch as he transitions to an everyday position player role. I think Henry Ford, how Oak put it to me in the fall was, you know who he looks like out there, Greg, is those guys in New York, Judge and Stanton running around in the outfield. You guys know how big Henry is. And I think that's kind of what his future is. And I think this sets him up well, for the draft, if he shows he can play the position correctly and do it well. And I think he'll be fine. I've heard he's got a cannon of an arm from out there in right field. You don't get to see it displayed at first base. So it'll be neat to see when that first, sac fly toward right field is hit, to see how he throws the ball toward home plate and what they have there. He's going to hit the ball 17 home runs last year. I don't think anybody should be concerned about the bat. That's there to stay. Casey Sauke will be very tough to replace from a veteran standpoint. He was so consistent last year too at the plate. Even at times when it seemed like the team struggled a little bit, he never struggled. He was always there to hit have a big hit or a big home run. So I think they'll be fine in the outfield. Teal maybe gives them a little bit more coverage in center field. And they've had good defensive center fielders the last few years, and in Bobby Whalen last year, of course, and then Ethan O'Donnell the year before.
Even back to Chris Newell, that center field
Yeah.
spot has been manned by a really good defensive player for a few years now under Brian O'Connor. And yeah, you mentioned, he's got some pop. He was 4 of 10 last year in his 10 at bats, and he hit three home runs. So like, Aiden Teel can crush it, and he did that in the Northwoods League this year,
Yeah.
this summer. Really good summer up there. Monty, the Didwick is back in left field. I saw in your lineup predictions, though, you have James Nunnally in left field. Why'd you kind of go for that? And just kind of what do you see out of the freshman?
Well, I'm a big fan of Nunnally. It's hard to imagine him in the DH role for me. He could be. You could see Antonio Parada in the DH role. The Didiwik throwing the baseball kind of had me thinking he might be the DH. I know he's had some issues throwing the ball into the infield, and he's going to start one way or another. You're going to have Didiwik out there. It's just a matter of whether he's going to be in the DH role or in left. And I just opted to put him as the DH just to kind of see how that felt, and to kind of give my little spin on it. But he could very well be in left, and Nunnally at the DH. It was just hard to imagine not taking advantage of some of Nunnally's athleticism.
Yeah, and James Nunnally Coaches have spoken extremely highly of him as one of the freshmen that got through the draft. He did get picked by the Milwaukee Brewers, but he got to grounds, and they're really high on him and what he can do at the plate as well. That DH role this year, guys, is going to be absolutely fascinating as the season goes on because there's so many different ways that you can approach it. Obviously, we haven't talked about the pitching yet, but Chris Arroyo, who we should talk about in length, is going to be a guy that could start for you and then also fill in that DH role similar to Devin Ortiz did a couple of years ago. So, then you got to put probably Antonio Parada in there at first base. And you've got just a couple of guys in there that could really make an impact in the DH role. Parada is one of them. Nunnally is one of them. And then just kind of seeing what you get from there. But I think Didowick, just him coming back, he's going to want to prove himself in the outfield. He made some great catches. Like, there's no doubting his athleticism. It's
He robbed
just
the home
the
run in Omaha.
robbed the home run in
Yep.
Omaha. He also had the other play in Omaha, but I think that overall he's a really good defensive player. It's the throwing that's going to be the biggest test for him. And talking to him in this preseason, he's really determined to prove himself in the outfield because he wants to get picked next year. He wants to go high in the draft.
That's a good point because that is it. He was draft eligible last year. It didn't go necessarily the way that he was hoping, and DHing him could harm his draft future rather than giving him that opportunity to start in the outfield. So that's probably a good argument for him to get that opportunity in left field.
Look, there's so many different ways you can go with this lineup. Real quick, just the order. I've kind of played around with it myself this year. The leadoff spot is interesting. I think, yeah, you probably Eric Becker seems like a good bet there. Just his lefty swing there, and kind of how you match up. The lefty righty kind of going on down through the lineup. I think Godbout is obviously your best hitter in the lineup, but maybe you want him in that number two role because he's a guy that can drive runs in. It's interesting how that works, and I basically in my head right now how I've seen it, and obviously Brian O'Connor will show us on opening day and prove all of us wrong and do something different. But Eric Becker and as the leadoff, Godbout, Chris Arroyo, Henry Ford, Harrison Didowick, Jacob Ferentz, and then like 7 through 9, you could go a couple different ways. I think Aiden Teel, Luke Hansen, and James Nunnally is probably how I go. Just Greg, what do you think of that lineup?
Yeah, they're with the way some of those guys swing the bat, they're almost interchangeable. Like to me, like Ford is, a power guy. Arroyo, you hear, is probably more of a power guy. But other than that, I feel like you can move. Like if Jacob Ferentz hit second, like it wouldn't surprise me, right?
Yeah.
He got popped, but like the dude hit over 300 last year and was really, really good for him, and he could fit in that spot. If they wanted to hit Godbout leadoff, that wouldn't shock me. If they wanted to see if Becker, with more playing time, was going to be more of a power threat and they'd put him, fifth or sixth, that wouldn't surprise me either. I think the way they're constructed and the way they've recruited has given them so many options in terms of what they can do offensively and how they need to stack the lineup. I think you'll see it change throughout the year based on who's hitting and who's not. It did last year and the year before, and the year before that. O'Brien O'Connor is pretty flexible when it comes to that and knows when his team needs a tweak. So I would think you'll see it change throughout the year. As far as day one goes, though, I think probably you'll see in the power spots Ford and Arroyo and Didowick
Yeah.
too. That some combination is probably your 3, 4, 5 hitters.
Yeah. You mentioned Brian O'Connor is always very quick to remind us that, just because this is how it starts on opening day, it's going to
Yeah.
change a lot as the season goes on because it's a long college baseball season. And usually he's talking about that in terms of the weekend rotation, especially, but it's very true for the lineup. I mean, you saw last year Ethan Anderson struggling at times. And so you kind of move him down in the lineup, give some other guys opportunities. The only consistent thing was Griffo Farrell in the leadoff spot. Everything else
For
changed at
3 years.
least, for 3 straight years. Only one game he moved him out of the leadoff spot, and he put Ethan O'Donnell in that spot and then changed it and never went back. I asked O'Connor about that last year, and he was like, I don't know what I was thinking. But yeah, I like how this lineup's kind of sets up for them. Like you said, like they have an embarrassment of riches. Like other teams would kill to have the problems that Brian O'Connor and Kevin McMullen have this year as far as putting together an offensive lineup. Monty, I know you took a swing at it too. I think that's pretty similar to what you had.
Yeah, I think it's right on what I had. So I'm with you on that. I just want to throw out there, none of the guys, I mean, obviously Nunnally is a freshman, but of the eight guys in the lineup that we just talked about, only one of them had an OPS under 1,000 last year. That includes Teal, that includes Arroyo. Luke Hansen was the one, and he had an 867 OPS, I think, which is really still, I mean, that having that in your 8 or 9 hole is absolutely
Yeah.
insane. So just talking about the depth there, I mean, Aiden Teal has, we just talked about the power he has. He has 20 plus home run potential. If you know everything goes right for him, he might be your number 7 hitter. That's bonkers.
Yeah, it's almost a cheat code. I know someone, I got a text about, home run totals and kind of predicting different guys, and I was just like looked at it and I was kind of doing rough math in my head because I can't do actual math, and I was just like, yeah, if that comes to true, which it looks like it could, like they're probably going to break the home run record again, and like that's just what this Virginia lineup does each and every year. Let's go into the weekend rotation now. Evan Blanco is back. Probably your locked in Friday ace for right now. And Jay Wolfolk is back. He's probably definitely a piece in that weekend rotation. Outside of those two, Brian O'Connor said there's probably, I think, six guys in contention. Obviously he lists Chris Arroyo, who I think we should talk about first, but then also Bryson Moore, a really promising sophomore coming up. Tomas Valinkas, a guy, a true freshman, really highly rated, was another guy that could have seen his name go in the draft last year. Kevin Jaxel, Joe Colucci, a JUCO guy. Am I missing anyone? I don't think I'm missing anyone.
I think you got them. Matt Augustine ticketed for the Penn, probably because he's a little bit behind. Remember Oak said that about a week and a half ago.
So of those guys, let's start with Chris Arroyo because we've kind of, ignored the elephant in the room long enough. Obviously, he's a really talented guy, JUCO player, coming in, started off at Florida, was a really well-known prospect coming into Florida, just because he was on one of the best teams in the state at Stoneman Douglas down there and really laid out a good career for himself. But, he was a lefty first baseman, lefty pitcher at Florida at the same time as Jack Caglione. So what are you gonna do? So he finds himself in JUCO and he gets back to UVA now. Obviously we've talked about him as a hitter. He's probably gonna work at first base and be in that 3-4 hole for Virginia in the middle of the lineup. But as a pitcher, it's really interesting just to kind of see what Virginia does with him. Monty, what do you think?
Yeah, it was interesting. I actually had the opportunity to interview him in the fall, and he was a PO for the most part at Florida, and that played a factor because he wanted to hit. He told me how much he would sit there and watch Wyatt Langford and take batting practice with Wyatt Langford, and they'd ask him, "What are you doing? You're a pitcher only." And he's like, "Well, I want to hit." So, and we saw in the fall he can hit, but he's got a low 90s fastball from the left side. He's got some quality secondary pitches. Supposedly, I mean, his big prospect status is with the pitching side. So, in theory, if he's a better pitcher than he is a hitter, we're in for a really, really nice treat throughout the season.
Yeah, his JUCO coach Lennon Coleman told me that when he got there, his fastball had dropped off 7 miles per hour, and by the end of it, like he said, he was back at that low 90s. But even on his final game there, I think he touched 95. So he's got a lot of just a pitch ability, I guess you could say. And the question, Greg, is Brian O'Connor said he's probably got to be a starter because you want his bat in the lineup. And it's just really impossible to get him to be a reliever coming out of the bullpen. So, where would you see him fitting in right now? Is he the Sunday guy behind Blanco and Wolfolk, or is he in the midweek games? Because, they play a lot of them.
Yeah, that's a great question. You had mentioned the Devin Ortiz blueprint from a few years ago. That was a midweek start, first base on what, Friday and Saturday, and a DH spot on the Sunday, if I'm remembering correctly.
That sounds,
I,
yeah, roughly.
yeah, and I remember his junior college coach when I spoke to him, Coleman, former coach of the Tom Sox in town too. He was saying the junior college schedule is a little different, right? They play double headers on Saturday. It's a Friday doubleheader Saturday. Double headers are 7 innings, and then a midweek game at some point. And he was saying Chris would typically start the first game of the doubleheader as a pitcher on the Saturday, and then DH the second game. He'd be in that DH pitcher spot in the first game, and then DH the second game. So it's going to be an adjustment for him either way. My guess is you probably either got to do the Tuesday thing like you did with Ortiz, or commit to the Sunday. Right. I don't think you probably want him going Friday, Saturday, and then having to play first base in the immediate days after he pitches. Right. You'd probably want to have a little breakup in there at some point. So to me, that's probably the options, either Tuesday or Sunday.
I think at some point he's going to be on the weekend rotation, even if it's not to begin with, because like I said, Brian O'Connor, this thing changes as the season kind of develops. You try different guys just to see what you got. I mean, last year, gosh, at one point I counted up all the different guys they tried starting on the weekend, and they got to a big number because, it was a different situation. Now you have a little bit more proven, veterans in there, and Blanco and Wolfolk to kind of hold it down, and then you can kind of experiment with that Sunday role with some really talented players. Bryson Moore is a guy I know they're very high about. I wrote about him in my five breakouts column over on the Saber. He's a guy that has a lot is a big body guy, has good velocity, and just kind of was figuring out the college game last year and had an injury there in his forearm. So that kind of held him back a little bit too. Also had some stuff going on off the field. And so he's a guy I think that they're really high on. And if it's Arroyo on Sunday, then I can almost guarantee Bryson Moore's pitching Tuesdays in the midweek.
I've heard a lot of good things about Valenkis. And I've heard, and he, remember, he comes from that Baylor school that produced both Godbout and Ford. So there's some preparation that might lend itself to him being ready to crack that rotation. But it sounds like they have more options and they have spots. So who knows? And maybe that's something they want to do down the road. But I just know from hearing a few things that Valenkis is impressive for being that young.
Yeah. And O'Connor made the interesting comment about Valinkas is like he's gonna make an impact on opening weekend. I don't know if that was specific or what that role looks like for Valinkas, but yeah, he's definitely a guy they're very high on. And the notable thing about him is just his control for being such a young pitcher. He pounds the zone. Bullpen wise, kind of looking at that, I think, I mean, is there kind of a consensus Blanco, Wolfolk, Arroyo, and then kind of Moore and Valinkas for those two other, midweek games, or kind of how that figures out? Is that what you're thinking, Monty?
Close to it. I mean, I think I went with Bryson Moore in the midweek, but Colucci would also have been in that conversation. I was really impressed with what I saw from him in the fall. And he started some games that I saw. So he's an intriguing option. But yeah, Bryson Moore, you and I are on the same page with that because I think he was one of my ACC breakout candidates. But yeah, I think it's going to be Blanco, Wolfolk, Arroyo. It may not be on opening weekend, but I think ultimately, ideally, that's the way it goes for most of the season. And then Bryson Moore, Valinkas will be in the conversation, and Colucci for the midweek. But the midweek is always an interesting thing because, it depends on what you want to do. I know Virginia 2 years ago in 2023 went with a really strong guy in Connelly Early, and he just dominated. The midweeks were automatic at that point because you had one of your best starters pitching the midweek. Whereas some schools like to take that arm and put him in the bullpen for weekend series, and then kind of go with a younger guy getting experience there. So it's really hard to tell what kind of strategy each team's going to employ, but I do like Bryson Moore in that role in the midweeks moving forward.
Yeah, he Connelly early that season tied Danny Holson for the program wins record. Holson and Early were facing very different competition, but it was
A win's a win.
a win's a win. Impressive all nonetheless. Yeah, that bullpen. One thing I'm looking at with the bullpen, I think there's some really intriguing transfer arms that they got coming in. Drew Kanan's one of them. Alex Marcus, another one, and just a couple other guys in there. And obviously Matt Augustine, I think, is the one that, Greg, we're really watching because of what he did in the postseason last year. I think I know he's a little bit behind, but if he slides into that closer role at some point this season, like that would not shock me at all. Kind of, it probably would be the best closer that they've had in that role since Andrew Abbott was there before he became a starting pitcher. That's kind of the talent we're talking about there. But the one thing I noticed about the bullpen is there's not a lot of lefty options this year. And that's the one thing with Valinkis. Obviously, it's more important, where do you start? If he's good enough to start, you start him. But does he kind of play a role there? Maybe more so towards the end of the season when you're kind of shortening those rotations and you got your three starters and you kind of go from there. But the bullpen is probably as deep as it's been in quite some time, Greg.
Yeah, I think so. And you mentioned no lefties, no Angelo Tonis to put in every single inning.
Exactly.
He was useful. I mean, he got outs. He got big outs last year too, for them at times. I don't know. Maybe Blake Barker can mature a little bit into a similar role where he's called on often as a left-handed reliever. I think too. You got to wonder when Jack O'Connor and Bradley Hodges return. Hodges is a left-hander. Can they find a bullpen niche, or were they more long relief? That to me is kind of fascinating. And I think O'Connor had even mentioned this, that Brian O'Connor had mentioned this, excuse me,
Yes.
that he thinks they'll get better as the season goes along because they'll get reinforcements as the year unfolds. With Hodges coming back from the Tommy John and Jack O'Connor coming back from the lat injury, like that's th those are like going to be like mid-season, depend, or who knows when they come back, but it'll be like
Yeah.
a trade deadline acquisition or almost for this Virginia team. So those are a couple things I'll be interested to watch as the year plays out.
And Brian O'Connor was pretty optimistic about just their
Yeah.
ability to come back in time to impact the season because the expectation's been that they'll come back this season, but was it going to be with enough time that they could kind of get the run up that they need to kind of get back into that rotation and, come out of the bullpen and make an impact down the road? I mean, what Jack O'Connor did when he moved into that bullpen role before he got hurt last year was really impressive, especially in that Wake Forest game and
Throwing
some of the
hard.
stuff. Yeah, did some really great stuff out of there. But yeah, you're talking about getting these late season acquisitions that were going into last season, your Friday and Saturday starters, and now they're coming back later in the year as just options out of the bullpen. Monty, as you look at this bullpen, what stands out to you?
Speaking of that left-handed ability, you're hoping Blake Barker, as Greg mentioned, can kind of bounce back because he was supposed to be a closer last year with
It
a
was,
kind of a
yeah.
left-handed platoon. Didn't have the greatest results there. Kevin Jaxel, he had a really good summer after a disappointing year where he struggled back and forth. But for me, it's Matt Lanzendorfer, who is a lefty D3 guy who was dominant at the D3 level, and I really like it. The depth of this bullpen, the question is, there's going to be a lot of experimenting because you're going to have to figure out the roles. Because there's even somebody like August Richie, who's a JUCO transfer, who could be an under the radar guy, and a guy I really liked in the fall, who is a deep sleeper breakout candidate, is Charlie O'Shell, who's the younger brother of former Duke standout Fran O'Shell, and I was really impressed with what he did this year. But the question is he going to get opportunities with how deep this bullpen is? It's a lot to be excited about because if the things go together with the pitching, this team is up there with Texas A&M as the best team in the country.
And look, me picking at, not a ton of left-handed guys in the bullpen is just like trying to like chip away at like Michelangelo's like artwork. Like what else can I say? But
Yeah.
Ryan Osinski is another guy we haven't mentioned yet, who's probably gonna factor out of that bullpen too. He had a good summer as well. All right, season predictions, just to kind of round it out here. We can go kind of rapid fire. We'll start batting average leader. Last year ended up being Henry Godbout. Greg, are we staying with Godbout or someone else popped in mind?
Good question. I think I'll go with Godbout. I'll stick with it 2 years in a row. I'll go with that.
I will stick with the self anointed best hitter on the Virginia baseball team. Monty, how about you?
I was gonna go with you guys, but just to be a little different, I'll go with Eric Becker.
Why not? I mean, he's going to be up there high in the lineup, so you're hoping he's
Yeah.
going to be one of the better guys as far as batting average. This is probably one of the more intriguing ones, is most home runs. Who's going to take that title? Monty?
I'll stick with Harrison Dittowick, to stick, he's gonna break Jake Gelhoff's record this year, not just tie it.
Okay.
And
All
break, I
right.
guess, the career record as well.
Yeah, it's crazy, just like the freshman year he had, and then all of a sudden now he's like in contention to break Gelhoff's record that we just, kind of got used to a couple years ago.
I'm going to go with Henry Ford. I think Ditto tops his total from last year, but I think Henry Ford has a great season.
Gonna shoot up those draft boards.
I was going to go with Henry Ford too. I think he's kind of been under the radar. Just like as much as a guy like him can be under the radar, like his move to right field, I know kind of made like a little bit of a log jam for the D1 baseball guys. So he didn't make one of the all preseason All-American teams because there's so many good outfielders, and then just he had a hammy, so he missed some of the fall and is kind of getting back up to speed in the outfield. But yeah, I'm expecting big things for Henry Ford, so I'm gonna go with him. How about 20 home run guys? How many are we thinking? That's a good question, right? Because yeah, up
I'm like
until I
counting them on my fingers.
well, Virginia historically, let me get this in front of me because I looked it up the other day when I was thinking about this exact question. They have had four players in the history of Virginia baseball have 20 plus home runs. Two of those are Jake Gelhoff. One was Brian Buchanan, who had the home run record since 1994 before Jake Gelhoff broke it a couple years ago, and then Harrison Ditwick. It's only happened four times. Do we have three guys that could do it this season?
Well, I've already committed to Ditowick and Ford.
Yes.
I've already committed to Ditowick and Ford.
I think Arroyo's a pretty easy inclusion there. Brian O'Connor even admitted he's probably fi between 15 and 20 home runs.
Man, I'm gonna hold off on Arroyo until I see it.
That's fair. That's fair.
I'm tempted to go four. I'm Ford, Ference, Ditwick, Arroyo. I mean, I think Teal's got
What about Aiden Teal?
potential.
Yeah, that's who I
That's what
was
I was thinking.
thinking.
I was like,
That's the sneaky one right there, is Aiden Teal.
I mean, they, especially with, they're going to play in some friendly parks. I mean, they get to go to Atlanta, and the ball flies out of there, so they might, that might boost their numbers a little bit. But I think four is a reasonable expectation despite history. Five might just be a little greedy.
I'm gonna hedge my bets and stick with three, but I could easily see four. Like, and outside of Ford and Ditwick, it could be any of them. I feel pretty good about Arroyo getting up there. Ference, like, I mean, some of the balls he crushed towards the end of the season, just incredible. What does he do in his year two,
Well,
and now kind of being more the full-time catcher too, which is another thing. He had some DH opportunities last year as well.
But what about even Becker? All his home runs came after the start of April last year. Like, and his playing, he was in a platoon, right? What did he finish with, eight or nine? Did he finish with eight or nine
Eight.
home
I think runs? Eight.
Like, I don't think he'll get there, but he could get close.
Well, and that's going back to, looking at Ditwick's season that he had the year before. Like, he found some pop in some of those early games, and then it kind of developed as the year went on, and then blew up last year. Becker kind of found it late in last year and blew up that way. So, I mean, it's probably the more interesting like thing to watch this year is just like, these guys are gonna be crushing the ball out of the dish, which is, not usually a place that you do it a lot at. But like you mentioned, Monty, they're gonna be in some good ballparks outside of the dish as well.
Yeah, and well, I was just gonna say, this is not your Virginia team of the 2000s and early 2010s. It's completely different from the small ball pitching first team that we saw. The hammer and who's are here to stay.
Yeah, it seems that way. That's the way they're headed. Most RBI, I'm gonna stick with Ford. He led them in RBI last year. I think he'll do it again this year. I'm tempted to go Royal, but I'm gonna go. I'll back off a little bit, Greg, because you want to see it first.
I just with Arroyo, it's hard to project, like, is he going to pitch and hit well throughout the entire year, right? You know he's going to try to do both, but is the transition from junior college baseball and doing it well at that level, is it drastically different? Is it slightly different? Does the length of the season play a role? Like that's my only question. It's clear, like everybody who's around him and who's been around him thinks the talent's there for him to do it. But can you do it over, right? By the time you get done with Omaha, how many games is it? 65, 68, maybe 70 if you win the thing. So like it's more opportunity, but it's also, you know, you're talking about a guy, if he's going to be relied on in the rotation, you know, is there any wear and tear to prevent it? That's my only hold up with it. Whereas like with Henry Ford and Harrison Ditewick, it's like, you know, they're going to be in a lineup every day and they're used to doing the job that they're doing, you know?
So you're going with Ford?
Yeah. RBIs. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll make it easy. I'll stick with Ford. We'll go Ford across the board.
Ditewick's a good shout here too. I just with Ford, he's a little bit more consistent with that contact, you know, gets more of those, you know, singles, doubles in there as well as the home runs. This one's fun just because of thinking about the Connolly early factor, if that is a thing. Most wins on the mound this season, Monty.
I'm going to go with Evan Blanco. I think he's poised to have a huge year. It's been really fun to watch him develop over the 3 years, from like lefty specialist to key bullpen arm to starter to ace. And I'm hearing his velocity's ticked up a little bit, which could be a game changer. So I'm going to go with him on Friday nights. I mean, it's tough to get all those wins on Friday nights because you'll be facing other teams' aces, and the ACC Friday nights are stacked. So it'll be interesting to see how that shakes out. But I'm going to just stick with the best pitcher in Evan Blanco.
What do you think, Greg? You see, you going Friday nights?
I'm gonna go Jay Woelfolk.
Okay, yeah.
I've talked to Jay a lot over the last 4 years, football, baseball,
Everything.
running from football practice to baseball practice. I was really impressed when I spoke with him, whatever it was, week ago, week and a half ago. I think he very confident in what he can do, comfortable in the off season he's had. The second time doing a full off season of baseball, and preparing for the role he's in, I think the postseason gave him confidence. I really do, and I think he's going to have an outstanding senior season. Remember, he's also trying to upgrade that draft stock, and that would go a long way for him to have a strong senior year.
I like the Jay Wolfolk shot. We had him on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, and present company, of course, not included. He's one of my favorite interviews we've had on the podcast because of how candid he was and just you know, talking about his struggles last year and
Yeah.
kind of everything that he went through, and then also just the ability to repeat the success that he had in the postseason last year. I thought it was really interesting from him. Highly recommend going back and listening to that, as well as every podcast here on the Who's On podcast. No shameless plug there. I'm gonna go with the midweek. I think it's tough to say who. Maybe Bryson Moore, just because he's the guy on Tuesdays. Maybe it could be Valinkas too. And maybe because there's not a consistent Connolly early on the midweek, maybe that's a dangerous pick. But I'll pick Bryson Moore, just to spice things up a little bit. Now we got three different guys in there, so I think that could
Yeah.
make this interesting at the end of the year. All right, MVP position player, Greg.
I picked Ford for home runs and RBIs, I got to go with
Feels,
Ford.
yeah.
I'm going to cheat a little bit and go with Chris Arroyo because of the two-way stats. I know you said position player, but I
The
think,
Shohei rule here.
I'm going to go Chris Arroyo. I think, I mean, even just if you take pure hitter stats, I think he's going to have a monster year. Watching Oak light up last month at the ABCA, when I ran into him and mentioned Arroyo, I mean, they are so over the moon to have this guy. So I'm really excited to see what he can do. And I think he might be the best hitter in the lineup.
It's funny. I think they were so excited in the fall and leading up to this spring about Chris Arroyo that now they're just kind of like, let's back off a little bit just to like let this guy go out and play college baseball this year. Yeah, it's tough. I think other good candidates here, Henry Godbout. He may not lead the team in RBIs and home runs, but I think what he does at number two or really high up in the lineup this year is going to be really crucial for this team. Didwick, we'll see what he does after his big breakout season. And Jacob Ferentz, I mean, how much value can you place on a veteran guy like that in the backstop? Greg, it reminds me of talking about football with having Brian
Brian Stevens,
Stevens in the middle
yeah.
of that offensive line. But yeah, I think Henry Ford's the pick here, and I think he's really setting himself up for a huge year going into a draft eligible season for him as a sophomore. Best pitcher, I kind of put this in there. I think Evan Blanco's the guy. Obviously, he really established himself as a true ace last year, which is one of the more incredible stories that I don't think we talk about enough. It's just like this guy was a lefty matchup reliever as a freshman, and then came into last year probably as your third or fourth guy that you wanted in the weekend rotation, and now he's your guy on Friday nights in ACC play.
Great,
Yeah,
great
yeah.
story last year. Yeah, I mean, how cool was it for him when he got to go up to Fenway Park and start a game in his hometown? That's that kind of, put his year in perspective to go from, a little bit of an afterthought going into the season to a guy who could start the game in the big league ballpark for the Cavaliers, and really pitch well from start to finish, over the course of the entire season. I think he'll be good. I think I'm optimistic about what Wolfolk's going to do this year. And if I'm picking all Wolfolk for wins, I feel like I've got to go for best pitcher with Jay this season.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with Blanco because I'm a big vibes guy, and I saw a team picture of him with a mustache, ahead of this year, and I just think that mustache is gonna be a game changer along with that uptick in velocity. So I'm gonna stick with Blanco. I'm a big vibes guy, and I think the mustache vibes are gonna play.
Monty, I'm glad you mentioned it, because if you didn't, I was going to. The team picture on the UVA updated roster is just absolutely incredible. Evan Blanco sporting the best mustache I've seen on the team in quite some time. So good vibes there. All right, finishing this out, ACC regular season finish. Obviously, the preseason favorites in the ACC. Do they hold on and win the ACC regular season title, Monty?
It's tough because they have a little bit difficult travel schedule compared to some teams. I mean, Florida State only leaves the state of Florida four times. North Carolina's got a favorable schedule. They don't go out west at all. So those two teams to me might kind of have the favorites because especially when North Carolina went 14-1 at home last year, they could do something similar. And if they do something similar to that, it's really hard to finish ahead of them. So, Virginia's obviously got a good chance, but some of that schedule tells me they'll finish in the top four, but maybe second through four.
I think that's totally fair. Greg, what do you see?
Yeah, I probably agree with Monty in that sense. It wouldn't shock me if they won a regular season. It wouldn't shock me if they finished. They'll be in the top four seed range, which is really the most important, right? With the change in the new ACC baseball tournament slate and style, that way you get the double bye. So as long as you finish in the top four, you set yourself up well for that ACC tournament.
Yeah, I'm gonna go. I'll say second. Just not to. I feel pretty good. I know that the travel's gonna be crazy this year, but just the amount of depth and options that this team has, I'm fully expecting them to prove all of us wrong and just go ahead and take the title this year. ACC tournament, Greg. You mentioned the new single elimination format. Can we first all just like.
Thank
Let's
God.
give it up to the ACC for finally realizing the error of their ways and getting on board with a more just conducive to normal, play for the ACC's tournament this year.
Yeah,
Yeah.
no confusion.
Go ahead, Monty.
I was just gonna say no confusion, you could look at exactly what's going on and know who's playing who, what you need to do. You don't have to worry about meaningless games. That's a huge one. I mean, I think it's as good a good a result a result you can have in terms of what your format looks like as opposed to the last 20 years of pool play.
Yeah, last year I was at the same hotel in Charlotte that Louisville was. Louisville, of course, played the first game of the tournament, first day, and lost, so they had no path forward. I think is the 7 seed, if I'm remembering
Sounds
correctly.
about right, yeah.
And they weren't gonna play again until the last game on Friday. I ran into a few players in the lobby, and they're like, "We're just hanging out, you know." They're walking around downtown Charlotte trying to find things to do. That needed to be removed. Like, you just felt not. You just felt like poor kids are just sitting around, you know,
Yeah.
waiting for what's next when they have no shot forward, path forward. It's different if you have a path forward. If you don't have a path forward, what are we doing here? You know. So to me, that getting rid of that is a good thing.
I think it helps the top teams as well. I mean, you had
Yes.
an advantage before, but now it's a little bit more straightforward. You know the teams that you're gonna, you're facing, kind of how the tournament progresses, and it's that single elimination feel as well also makes it feel better, I think, as watching a tournament. Like, you like everything being on the line, win or go home.
And with the
And
double bye, you don't have to, if you're a top four seed, you still aren't burning out your pitching staff before the NCAA tournament,
you
which I
stick on
think
that
is,
pitching schedule as well, which is the biggest thing for these coaches.
And I think if you're a top four seed, you earn that right? You earn the chance to go into a weekend knowing, hey, I got my Friday night guy for the first game, you know, or however they want to arrange it, but you can use your top three pitchers if you want to and not have to deviate from your regular season plan.
It makes the ACC regular season more compelling too, because the race
100%.
for those top four, and then even for the top eight,
Yeah.
you...
Well, and Cal Stanford trying not to be in one of those 9 a.m. seeds because that would be 6 a.m. Pacific time for them, and they'll be fighting not to be one of those seeds.
You think anybody's turning it on the ACC network out in the Bay Area at 6 a.m.?
I don't know, but the body clocks might be, still be on the 6 a.m.
And where poor Rintaro, whatever his body clock is at that point, come from Japan. But Monty, Virginia has not done well in this in the past. They barely made it out of pool play, except for a couple times since this has kind of been the format. I think 20 was 2011 the last time they won the ACC tournament.
That sounds right.
I think it was around that time. This feels like it steps up way more for Brian O'Connor to actually be like, all right, let's go out there and have a good weekend in Charlotte or in Durham this year. What do you think? How does Virginia do in this new ACC tournament?
I expect them to do better moving forward, whether that's this year or down the line. We'll see. I'm positive if they're in the top two or three seeds, they'll be looking pretty good and be able to win. The tricky part is if they finish fourth like they did last year and they get stuck with a fifth seed like Florida State, that makes things a little tougher. But I think they're going to at least win one. And once you kind of get rolling, you get in there. But you don't know who's going to get hot. I mean, Duke, I think, was the sixth seed last year, and they just decided they were going to win the ACC tournament. And so it's really tricky to say who's going to be the ACC tournament champion, but I'm going to go ahead and say that they'll at least make it to the semifinals this year on Saturday. Yeah.
Get to the weekend.
Yeah.
I think they're going to win it. Why not?
I'm on that train too. I was waiting to see if I'd be the only one.
With how many players, and this is why I like them maybe a little better in Omaha too this year. Like, with how many players have played and experienced meaningful postseason elimination games, at some point it's gotta flip and turn in Virginia's favor, right? And I'm thinking about Diddowick, Wolfolk, you know, Ford, all these players, Blanco, who have pitched in the biggest of big games. And I think, you know, at some point you have that experience to lean on to push you through, which is why I think this team. As long as they get in the postseason, right, and get to an NCAA tournament, you know, they've got as good a shot as anybody because they have that experience.
Yeah, it's exactly what you talked about. That experience that they have, I think this team is built for postseason type
Yes.
baseball. And that's exactly what this ACC tournament is more similar to now, just kind of with the format. And then I guess we go now transition. How do they finish this year? I know the goal is Omaha. I feel pretty strongly they're going to get back to Omaha. And then it's kind of a weird thing when you get to Omaha. It's just kind of How does it play out for you? I think the ACC, unlike last year, is much more ready to compete against SEC teams. Darren Vaught, who was just on here, says he thinks the ACC will get more teams in to Omaha than the SEC. Of course, that all depends on the bracket and how that all works out and matchups. But I'm going. I think they get to Omaha, and I think they make a run to at least the championship series.
I'm with you. I keep it short and simple. I already went through my spiel about how I think they're experienced. I think this sets up well for them this year. I'm planning on a long stay, long stay in Omaha.
No plans in June.
Come June. No. So I think when we talked about pitching, like you have pitching options that time of year, and veteran pitching options in that with Woelfolk and Blanco and then you throw in Arroyo, who's been there with Florida, right? Remember he was there. He was on that team that beat UVA. Like there's some experience there.
Yeah, I'm with you guys. I think they get back to Omaha. I just flash back a little bit to what Greg said at the beginning of the show with what baseball, college baseball is like. You just gotta hope you don't run into one of those hot teams that are in your regional or super regional because that's where you can get derailed a little early. But I think I'm as confident as Virginia making it back to Omaha as I am of really any team in the country. The question is, what can you do once you get to Omaha? And I'm hoping the ACC does significantly better because the my trip in Omaha last year was brutal because each of the first 4 days an ACC team that I'd covered all year was eliminated, and I had to post about it, and I was just so defeated by the time I was I it was over, and I was like, oh my goodness. So yeah, but I think if you get to Omaha with the pitching and with what you've got a chance to win the national championship, and that's technically true for anyone who's making it to Omaha. You can, we've seen Coastal Carolina and Fresno State as mid-majors make those runs to a national championship, but there are certain teams that are a tier above, and Virginia should be one of those teams once they get to Omaha that they'll be in the upper tier of a national championship favorite.
Yeah, if Blanco and Wolfa kind of maintain or kind of continue their trajectory as pitchers, and then you get a breakout from whether it's an Arroyo or Moore or Valinkas or whoever it may be, you got the options there for guys that can kind of get in there and give you some really valuable starts at the biggest time of year. Monty, you didn't mention that after all that, all those ACC losses, you had to make the drive back
That's
to from Omaha.
yeah, it was brutal. I had to sit there and stew in the losses for about 20 hours.
Just thinking about all of it. But all right, guys, we're just a couple days away from the start of this Virginia baseball season. We'll be back at the dish in no time and going through some really interesting series this year. And hopefully we end up back in Omaha by the end of it. But thanks again for coming on the Who's On podcast. And I mean, we dove into just about every topic we could about UVA baseball this year.
Thanks for
Thanks,
having me.
Preston. All right, that'll do it for the Who's On podcast. You can catch all our baseball coverage over at thesaber.com and follow, subscribe to the Who's On podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcast. We'll see you later in the week.